January 16th. Madam Treasurer, may I have the roll?
Mrs. Romero?
Here.
Mr. Truex?
Here.
Mr. Whitman?
Here.
Mr. Begany?
Here. And now for the Pledge of Allegiance, led by Rosso student Alexandria Turner. Alexandria, come on down. Madam Treasurer, please call the roll. Yes, of course.
So in reviewing the minutes, I discovered that they are what I've now learned to call brief minutes, and it's just basically the motions that were made, if they passed or not. And I wanted to get at least some of the highlights of the discussion into the minutes so that the public who is interested can find out some of the reasons for the votes that were taken. Mrs. Miller explained that's not so much the purpose of these brief minutes, but that there are audio recordings of the meetings. Okay, could you tell a little bit more about that or your proposal?
As Mr. Woodman pointed out, we do have audio recordings. We record all our board meetings. We're recording this one as we speak. And so I suggested that maybe, in addition to putting the brief minutes on the district's website, to also put the audio recording out there. That way people could review the minutes, and if they wanted to go and see if there was any discussion, they could then listen to the recording and hear all the discussion.
So if... Knowing that the audio recordings are available to those interested, I'm willing to take a vote on this now, but I would like to explore the option of making the audio recordings available. So I don't know if that would be an issue for the policy committee to bring up. Or...
I don't believe it would be a policy issue, it's just more of an availability.
Okay, so since she had I had the mic, she said, yeah, she can just start putting them out there. And one thing that might be worth noting is that the different buildings have different sound systems. One advantage of City Hall to consider when we revisit the issue of where to hold the meetings in the summer is that it has an audio system already in place that Tammy says is pretty good. All right, thank you.
Any other discussion? Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye. This is just the...
Agenda.
Aye.
And Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion carries. Item 3.01, approval of the February 16, 2016 Board of Education meeting agenda. Madam Superintendent, are there any changes to this evening's agenda?
Mr. Begany, there are no changes to the agenda.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second. Moved by Mrs. Dunlap, seconded by Mrs. Tornero. Any discussion? No? Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 4.01, continuous improvement plan of Slate Ridge Elementary, and a convenient location for all of you, I'm sure. You have the floor. Thank you.
Good evening, President Begany, members of the board, Superintendent Thompson. I am Micah Conley, principal of Slate Ridge Elementary, my administrative intern Katie Byers, and intervention coordinator Becky Wintake would like to present our Slate Ridge CIP. Slate Ridge facts of the graphics of our building. Including our pre-K, we have 593 students here. 66% of those students are minorities. 13%, or about 8 of our children here, are language-enriched peoples. 18% of our students are on IEPs, and this year we're at about 65% free and reduced lunch. To take a look at where we were, last year's state report card, we've met all the indicators except for fourth grade social studies. This earned us a B, an 80% B. We passed our math indicators in both third and fourth grade with approximately 15% higher than the state expectation. I found that very interesting. And we will be addressing the social studies improvement plan later in a couple of slides. Our report card performance index last year was a C. We did miss the mark of the B by less than 1%. We used this data to address our flex and RTI for higher achievement later in the year. We felt that our limited and basic numbers stayed lower than we liked, and we weren't happy with the number of advanced students that we had. So we felt that we needed to address both the top and the bottom of our students as far as their achievement goes. Just a glance at our annual measurable objectives. Our rating here was also a B. If you look at the columns of reading and math, you'll see in each subgroup that we have lower scores more often in the math portion than we do in our reading portion, except for the white population at the bottom, which is about even. 3% is a huge difference. One of the gaps that I found as we began looking at this was that with the change of the PARC test coming in last year, we had a drop of 10% in reading overall, and we also had a 10% drop in math as well. But the largest gap that I found was our African American students' proficiency. It dropped 21% in math last year. So even with those high numbers that we saw meeting 15% above state expectation, we were doing that while taking a drop at the same time. So from that information, we've created our goals. Of course, everyone's goal, I think, is to grow all students, exceed a year's growth in a year. And we are going to measure this growth by data that we use with our STAR measure. For both math and reading, we're expecting that kind of growth. Our second goal is to continue meeting the AMO in our subcategories at 80% or higher. Of course, we'd like to make an improvement there. We're going to pay a particular attention to the socioeconomically disadvantaged students and our African-American students in math, and always keeping an eye on our students with disabilities. Goal number three, decrease student misbehavior and referrals by implementing a school-wide discipline plan. This is a plan that we put into place after speaking to teachers and staff over the July months when I came in. This was an area that they were concerned with. They felt that student behavior was interrupting the classroom, causing students to leave the classroom. So we worked something out so that students would be in class more often. Goal number four, we would like to earn all A's and B's on the OD Slate Ridge report card. We did that with the exception of a C in our K-3 literacy. So how will we get there? When I talked to teachers, the entire theme that everyone said is that they wanted to grow every student, the entire student, and they needed some help and support with the curriculum. So I did bring two curriculums with me, a reading curriculum and Eureka Math. They're both free curriculums online. Core Knowledge is the reading curriculum, and we have blended learning already in place at Slate Ridge, IFL and TutorMate in first grade. Teachers are using Lexia for reading this year. Dreambox was in place. We're piloting iReady. So back to the traditional side of things, these were the two new curriculums that we brought in, and we have had ongoing PD in both areas. Core Knowledge and Eureka Math allow us to individualize instruction for students along with the blended learning. Let's take a look at Core Knowledge first. It's going to address the social studies gap that we have, along with helping teachers provide more curriculum and support for students in reading. College is a comprehensive approach to English language arts instruction. Every unit is based and integrated into science and social studies. So as the students have two components of their day, a listening learning strand that is led by the teacher, if you see the third row down, it says background knowledge. There's science and social content, science and social studies content in all of those lessons, so that student learning is embedded in actual meaningful content instead of trade books that aren't very interesting to students. This is content that those students that went on to college from inner cities, they have found that they dropped out because they didn't have background knowledge in the areas of history and science. They could do school well, quote unquote, they could read well, they could do math, but when it came to doing higher level studying, they didn't have the background knowledge, they didn't have the understanding of the world around them to be successful, and therefore they had a very high dropout rate. So Edie Hirsch is behind this research, and this is the reason that you'll see the science and social studies areas that they chose were what they found the areas that students lacked the most. So we put this into place for second, third, and fourth grade since K-1 already had IFL. But as students go through this curriculum, they see the same content over and over, and it builds upon itself. So what you see highlighted in orange is an example of a history unit that the students see as they continue on. So they start in second grade, they see the westward expansion. In third grade, they revisit it again and see early exploration of North America. Fourth grade, they go on to talk about the American Revolution and so on. This happens with animals, human body, light and sound, a lot of science and social studies areas that students just don't have the background knowledge. This also improves their vocabulary and ability to read text outside of school. And it's surprising how much they will start to bring in different books from the library. As I've taught this curriculum before, students started bringing different types of books from the library to my classroom that I never expected them. Like, for example, the Romans was a big hit. When I looked at the unit, Romans? Third graders aren't going to like Romans. And it was fantastic, and they loved it. So this is one of the ways that we're addressing the social studies gap that we have, is implementing this thinking and this type of reading and studying and conversation prior to fourth grade. Eureka Math, I know Mr. Coffey spoke about this as well for his CIP. Eureka Math is a very well-known math curriculum. It's free online as well. We have had two PDs this year so far, helping our teachers get more familiar with this type of curriculum. What Eureka Math is and is not, it is using real-world problems, not endless exercises without context. The main thing that sets it apart from other curriculums is it helps students understand why they are doing things, not just memorizing the steps and the how to do it, but they really grasp the understanding of what they are doing and why. Throughout the curriculum, they have to explain their reasoning, so they have to understand, write a story, draw a picture of the problems that they're solving. It's not enough just to add the numbers or subtract the numbers, but they have to show you physically and spatially what they're doing. And it also teaches them to do math in their head. There's a fluency practice with Eureka Math. Just as you think of fluency for reading, they go through fluency with math facts for students to get those to be second nature. Mr. Coffey, I believe you showed this slide as well. When Eureka Math was compared to other curriculums, they did a long study out of 70 possible points, and Eureka clearly is blowing every other curriculum away. The next closest was My Math. They had 38 points out of 70, and Eureka consistently scored 63 points. And that was how friendly it was for teachers, how well the students learned the rigor of the curriculum, and so on. So where are we now? In STAR Reading, we are always looking at the gain in the third column. For everything, we're looking at growth. That's the most important piece. It's not where we start, but it's where we're moving kids. Our gain for kindergarten this year so far has already been a 37% gain of proficiency. And those are students that have moved to grade level expectation. Third grade, we began the fall with 30%. We've moved all the way to 21%, and so on. I won't read all of them to you. If you look down at our kindergarten in September to fourth grade, that's 17 to the 60%. You can see as students go through Slate Ridge, they come in every year higher and higher in their proficiency, beginning in kindergarten at 17% and coming in at fourth grade at 60%, which I thought that was a very impressive number to know. Star Math, same thing, our gain is in the third column. Right now, the biggest lull that we've seen is in fourth grade, but we've come in at 74% proficient to start out the year. And remember, that's the first couple weeks of school. So we're taking a look there. We're putting some interventions into place in third grade as well. Again, if you look from first grade down to fourth grade, they come into us at 56% proficient, and by the time they come in fourth grade, they're 20% of an improvement as far as students in the green. And where we are with third grade. As you all know, third grade fall OAA scores or AIR results just came out. We're comparing that to our OAA scores from last year. If you look at the first column or the first row, 15-16 AIR at total proficient, we have 41% of our students pass at total proficient level, which doesn't sound very high, but if you understand that the new expectation from the state is 55%, not the 80% that it's been in the past, we're pretty close. So we only have about a 14% gap there. Our third grade reading guaranteed passage was 72%, and that's a large improvement from last year where we came in at just 59% on the fall. So our approach, now that we have this information, what do we do with it? How do we address kids? How do we make changes throughout the day? And one thing that I mentioned at the beginning was RTI and Flex and how we're addressing growing all students. Ms. Neil Paik is going to talk a little bit about that. We did make some changes to our Flex approach.
Good evening. I'm Beth Neil Paik. I'm the intervention coordinator here at Slate Ridge Elementary. As Mrs. Conley said, we've made some changes to our intervention program. We've changed the name to start with. We're calling it our Flex program. There's a couple different reasons for that, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But the main reason we decided to make some changes here at Slate Ridge with our intervention program is because we wanted to minimize the amount of time that students were pulled out of class in order to maximize their classroom instruction. Some of the big changes that we made, we changed the name Flex, like I said, and the reason for that is we wanted to see fluid movement for students. If we see students are performing well, we want to be able to move them in and out of groups. If we see that students need extra intervention, we want to be able to provide that as well. This Flex program is something that is allowing us to provide intervention and enrichment for all students across a grade level at the same time every single day. That's been a big change for us. Another change is that we're having grade level data meetings every quarter. This allows us to talk to each individual teacher about their classroom data, which means we talk about every student. We don't just talk about the struggling students. We want to make sure that we're moving all students. Then from there, we make groups based on students' strengths and weaknesses. We use our Dibbles program, STAR, and then we use a quick phonics screener so that we can target very specific skills to then plan our interventions from there. During this time, we're using all grade level teachers, we're using special education teachers, Title I teachers, ESL teachers, and paraprofessionals to provide the intervention and the enrichment. As I said before, we're making sure that we're incorporating every single student within the grade level. We did this really well first semester, then we had some staffing changes. So second semester, we had to kind of look at where do we go from here? What kind of changes do we need to make to make sure that we are providing what's best for our students? So we decided to, again, reach the students that are performing at the highest level, and then also we wanted to look at the students in the bottom 5 to 10%, and we changed some of those groups, made them very, very targeted, small groups, very, very skill-based. And like I said before, we like this program because it's allowing us to move students in and out of groups, and also one of the other big changes to provide enrichment. Thank you.
second grade, for example, has flex at the same exact time every day, so that the team of intervention specialists, helpers, everyone who's coming in to provide that help can all come at the same time. So at that time, it lessens the class size for the teachers, so they can provide tier two level support, the higher kids can go out, they can get enrichment, and then we can provide that skills-based targeting for the kids that are struggling. This allows everyone to have intervention at the exact same time. What we were doing before was providing intervention all day by one person. And this was lasting all day long, so second grade students were coming in and out of the classroom all day. Now they know that there's 30 minutes where everybody gets their intervention and it's over, and they stay in class the rest of the time. One of the areas I also mentioned was the school-wide discipline plan, and Ms. Byers is going to talk about that and how it's affected our students so far this year.
Good evening, I'm Katie Byers. I'm the administrative intern here at Slate Ridge. The data up on the table is the discipline here at Slate Ridge last year up until this point as compared to this year. I'm not going to go over all of the numbers for the sake of time, but if you look at the first thing, which is total office referrals, so this is any time the student will be referred to the office due to a behavior. Last year it was 262 incidents, this year 114 incidents. A big reason for that is something that Mrs. Johnson was talking about. We do have a school-wide positive behavior plan that's in place this year, and it outlines the steps for behavior. So when a student gets a violation, they have a specific consequence. If they come to the office again for another violation, it's a more severe consequence. So every time that they come to the office for a referral, the consequence is very clear. We try to stay as consistent as we can to it, child to child, so that there aren't a lot of discrepancies there. It also outlines what are classroom-managed behaviors versus office-managed behaviors. So that's keeping kids in the classroom as much as possible. One of the other things up on that table that I wanted to point out was in-school suspensions. Last year we had 11 incidents for 10 days as compared to 20 incidents this year, which is a big jump. But then when you look at out-of-school, we had 32 incidents, this year only 21. We are really trying to provide in-school consequences as much as we can. I have in-school suspension area in my office. It allows kids to stay in school in that academic environment, continue learning or communicating with teachers, and that way kids aren't missing out on learning and not getting to subsequent consequences when they're at home. So that's something that we're really aiming to do. The other piece that's really important to us is the counseling piece of discipline. We really strive not to just jump into the discipline of behavior, but really address what could be an underlying issue. Personally, I go towards the counseling thing first and foremost, and then when discipline's needed, that's there. But we really strive to hit that mental health piece as much as possible, because sometimes that can be an underlying issue for a lot of those behaviors.
Okay, and just to wrap up, the last thing I wanted to point out very quickly was that when I came on board last summer, it was a whirlwind to be a first-year principal, especially with all the things that go on. You don't realize administrators how hard they work during their off time. And I was very lucky because I only had to hire one person. Our entire Slate Ridge staff returned last year. So I want them all to stand up, those that are here. So that says a lot for the loyalty of Ramsburg to Slate Ridge.
Change really has the impact or not, since you changed
or modify or tweak several things I think I heard you mention tonight.
Oh, we did, and that was never my intention coming in, but as I interviewed staff and talked to them over the summer, something they wanted was support. So one of the things that we said when we started looking at Core Knowledge, first and foremost, was that they didn't have to use it 100% entirely because they didn't have the training yet. So second, third, and fourth grade began using the pieces that they liked because all the skills pieces are there, making sure that they are hitting the standards and that they weren't having to create their lessons as they were in the past. And from what I've gathered from our conversation, that was becoming cumbersome. For math, I think we're seeing a little bit of a dip, as you do with typically with a new program, getting used to it, getting away from the old way. The issue that we had was that we really didn't have any choice as far as coming into a math curriculum because we had nothing left to do. Our My Math that we had the previous year was picked apart and we didn't have the money to reorder it, so we went to this new curriculum. So we're kind of doing a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new right now and implementing things and going forward. As I looked at my STAR scores, I've been keeping a close eye to make sure that our growth is the same as it has been in the past. And in every area, we're a little bit higher, except I believe it was one number. It was third grade math that was lower. So we know we're still getting the gains and the growth that we have in the past.
Okay, that was one of my questions I had earlier. You talked about the gains that you're getting this year, but I wanted to know how those gains compare to last year's at the same time.
And we looked back about, I looked back approximately 3 years to be sure that this wasn't a fluke and that we were on the right track. So we're still growing kids at the same rate.
At the same rate.
From fall to winter. Yeah, we were the same. We were increasing in every area except I believe one, and it was third grade math that took the dip.
Okay.
We were within a percent or two or three, we were comparable.
And mathematics happened to be the core area that African American students struggled in most.
Right,
is that correct?
That was the biggest drop when I looked from the data given to us by the state. That was a 20% drop.
And I thought it was interesting that you disaggregated the data by subgroups early on, but then when you talked about your gains, I'd be really curious to see what kind of gains you're getting from those same subgroups that you're targeting.
And most of that data we just received from the state.
No, I mean your data, internal data.
Okay.
Not
that's
your
something to look
data,
at, right?
But some of the curriculum pieces, some of the data points that you referenced earlier, what kind of gains are you getting from
kids,
your special education kids, your students of color, et cetera, that you outlined at the beginning of your presentation? I'd be curious to see if the gains are same rate, any difference in those gains. And just a statement. I think your presentation is very thorough. The 55% from the state is very low. So I know.
Agreed.
Yeah. So
when
we're not striving for
71. It was like a heart attack when everyone saw 41, and then we realized the difference that it's no longer 80% that we're supposed to mean. So just to get everyone kind of used to that new.
I would say our target is still 80%.
I agree.
I agree. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Continuous improvement plan from Rose Hill Elementary. Come on down.
Good evening, President Begany, members of the board, Superintendent Thomas Manning. I am Kim Lewis, principal of Rose Hill Elementary, and on behalf of the Rose Hill staff, Ms. Elisa Lewis and I would like to share our Rose Hill Continuous Improvement Plan. Culturally responsive practices that acknowledge and value diversity. foster safe, supportive learning environments, focus on learning at all levels, and build leadership capacity through shared leadership to accomplish sustainable, systematic change. Our student performance target goals. All Rose Hill students will achieve at least 1 year's growth in the areas of math and reading as measured by STAR. Rose Hill students will meet annual measurable objectives for all subgroups. Rose Hill will achieve a performance index of 80%. Rose Hill will maintain a safe school culture with an engaging and hopeful climate for all students and staff. And Rose Hill will explore effective instructional strategies and avenues of blended learning to increase student achievement as measured by STAR, DIBELS, and AIR assessments. To foster a safe and healthy environment by addressing the social and emotional needs of students, we have a positive behavior interventions and support system in place. It contains established, consistent, and shared expectations, positive feedback and rewards, tiered behavior interventions, and integration of Class 1 to 3, a web-based behavior management tool that provides daily live communication with parents through Class 1 to 3's website or app. We also have the Ron Dairy's Food Program. It is a fourth grade incentive and character recognition program, and it's provided by Parents in Education. They provided the funding for that. We added a school counselor influence to our social worker position, and this was to implement trauma-informed care of students who have faced adverse childhood experiences. And then teacher training provided in crisis prevention and intervention to assist each student to be present with a learning-ready brain. And the utilization of our district's behavior coach to improve services for trauma-sensitive students has supported many of our classrooms. In a combination of servicing students and building community partnerships, we have teamed up with Wesley Family Services to provide school-based therapy. 12 students are pending services, and they are in the intake process now. 10 students receive services. And Wesley Family Therapist, a Wesley Family Therapist is assigned to Rose Hill a full day for every 5 students who are enrolled in their program. Right now, with the 10 students, we have Lauren Kaminsky for 2 days a week, and she does spread out her time. So she's in the building 5 days a week in shorter times. We also have 4 students who also receive school-based services from St. Vincent Family Center or Nationwide Children's Hospital. And these therapists communicate with teachers and attend parent conferences. Their presence in the building is really effective in helping our students. They help us create behavior plans and strategies to help our students, again, with that learning-ready brain. We provide adaptive web-based blended learning through Dreambox and MAP, innovations for learning for our early literacy, and that includes tutoring with it, where our students will FaceTime with professionals outside of our district and read. It's pretty cute. I was in a classroom and the phone rang, and the teacher called the student's name, and she went over and started reading with this person on the computer. And then we have Lexia for reading. To strengthen our ELA instruction, we are increasing a focus on 6 dimensions of reading: mimic awareness, systematic phonics, background knowledge and vocabulary, fluency, comprehension, and motivation. To increase rigor in comprehension instruction, we are implementing close reading. It is an instructional routine in which students critically examine a text, especially through repeated readings, to address the Ohio Learning College and Career Readiness Anchor Standards at a complex level. Close reading also prompts and supports student writing of arguments and opinion articles, informative and explanatory text, and narratives. To close reading. We have focused on the Ohio Learning Anchor Standards. We've had professional development on our district's professional development day. We purchased close reading materials. And at this time, Ms. Limbers will share a little bit about her experience in bringing close reading into her classroom.
Good evening. I'm Alisa Limbers. This is my 23rd year teaching in Reynoldsburg, and I teach fourth grade language arts. And I kind of just want to tell you how my career has started and changed in the last 23 years. I used to think that I could just teach reading by giving the children a random text or a random book, and we would read it, we would answer just random comprehension questions about it, and that would engage their learning and further their knowledge. Well, this year I was introduced to something called close reading, and Kim brought that to our building this year when she came, and I was pretty intrigued as a reading teacher myself. I'm always looking for something new, and so I checked with my fellow third grade colleagues who were also using it, and then we also had an in-service day not too long ago, and it kind of has completely changed how the structure of my classroom is working this year. Where now what I do is I pick a close reading text based on the Ohio Learning Standards, and then I have the children look for multiple texts on the same topic. If it's a nonfiction article, for instance, we just finished one on Lewis and Clark's westward expansion with the Louisiana Purchase, and they needed to go online and they needed to find a companion text that would match the same thing on their level. And then that would show them how to use their own resources to find something, as well as learning how to compare and contrast different articles from different points of view. And then it also shows how we can do repeated readings. And this is where I'm getting the most bang for my buck, because as you know, when you read something just once, you're just kind of skimming the topic of what you're learning about. And so then I noticed that if they read it again, they started to gain a deeper comprehension of what they were reading about, the topic, if it was fiction or nonfiction. And they started to connect a little bit to themselves. By the time they went to their third reading, they had a very deep understanding of the topic. They were starting to form their own opinion and compare it to the author's opinion and their author's point of view. And that's what we really want. We want them to grow and look at their deeper knowledge, and then how does it connect with the world. And so then what I do is I take those articles or those books, and then we expand it even more, where they now have to go and we work with Google Classroom, and they go out online and they're presenting PowerPoint slideshows, or they're doing graphic organizers, or they're doing curriculum mapping. They're working with groups, and they have to get up and present, which is what we want. We want our students to be able to get up and knowledgeably present an article or information that they've learned. And I know that Ms. Dunlap was in my room a couple of weeks ago, and she was watching my children, and they were all at different varieties of, some were on the computer, some were researching, some were creating PowerPoint, some were doing slideshows, some were working in small groups with me, and that helps me differentiate the instruction for my students, as well as showing me what they need. Where can I guide them next to enrich their learning? And so close reading is a very important part of how we teach reading at Rose Hill.
Tutoring to 22 third graders and 16 fourth grade students who are identified as off track by our district's criteria and the fall third grade reading guarantee promotion score and also STAR math assessment. Students receive targeted instruction on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2:45 until 3:45. One thing that we are trying and is new is we have added a cognitive skill program for students who display difficulty in remaining on task and completing independent work. It's called Play Attention, and it's a computer-based program that integrates feedback technology with cognitive skill training. And the students will wear a biofeedback armband, and they have to pay attention, and the game that focuses on increasing an attention span has a deep-sea diver, and as they focus on him, the armband measures their brain waves. And so if they focus, he'll swim faster and deeper into the water. And then and is there, and there's a little graph that will show their chart, their amount of attention also. And so there are other programs to this to work on memory, task completion, auditory processing, which affects the peer relationships and behavior. And so we have one in each kindergarten classroom right now. We have one in second and third. And we are working through Title I funding to have one for every grade level. And if we look at this, so many of our students struggle with attention, and parents come to us and say they don't want to use medication. And so you feel like, well, how can we help them? And this is one way. And if you look at this, when we do our multi-factored evaluations, we're measuring attention, memory, auditory processing. So those things, I'm hoping to see a decrease in the amount of students that come to testing who do not qualify. So I think that this program will address that. And then just to share, these are some books that I am using that are guiding me. They're resources that I have found valuable, and they're research-based. They also provide some insight from successful educators who have made a difference in schools. And I will be buying these books for my BLT team, and we'll be working to implement some strategies that make a difference. And I also have a lot of books
up. like a nanny cam for moms and dads. Classroom, I like that. I need to get one of those. I need two of those. All right. Well, I don't have any other questions. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Board members may speak on different topics at this time. Mr. Truex.
I don't have anything at this time.
Ms. Tenaro.
No, I have nothing at this time.
Mr. Whitman.
Yeah, I'd like to highlight that on February 29th, Leap Day, that's the meeting of the calendar committee, the central office, at 4 o'clock. So if any of you, if you've ever wondered how on earth the district arrived at the dates that they do for the calendar, well, this is your chance to come and hear it all hashed out. And that's it. Ms. Dunlap.
Okay, good evening. I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. It's not quite as snowy right now as it was this morning, and my back is telling me that after shoveling my driveway twice. I want to thank Mrs. Connolly and Mrs. Lewis for your presentations. I really enjoyed being in both the schools and seeing everything that was going on. Very collaborative, very dynamic, and I really enjoyed my day and my couple of hours moving around and all the extra time. I have been able to tour most of the schools over the past month, and I really appreciate that. I have a few more on my list. It's very different, even, you know, writing about education for 15 years, but then getting into the classroom, it's very, very different. Actually seeing what is going on, I'm enjoying those. I did get to see the robotics club this Saturday. It's more than just building a robot and programming. That stuff's way above my head, but the collaboration, the camaraderie was just incredible in that space that I got to observe. Also got to observe the OMEA conference or the competition. Amazing. I think we looked very good in front of 30 different school districts. I don't know how many different schools themselves were represented, but I understand from talking to those that we are a very sought-after district coming. People really enjoyed coming to our district, the way they are treated, the beautiful atmosphere, and so great job to all the music educators who worked on that and to the music boosters who helped make that happen. Got to go to Chipotle last night and support Braxton. I got to meet him while I was here. The line went all the way back to the back of the restaurant. It was just incredible, very, very heartwarming. Braxton has cancer, he was here, and it was a night to raise some money for him and show support. He was there the whole time with his red cape on. I did meet with the mayor again this month as the city liaison. Just a couple of things. We talked a lot about safety and security with some incidents that did happen over the past month and a half in this district, and the collaborative effort that we have between the city and the school district. And it's definitely a collaborative effort. And then also, the city is still conducting its survey via phone until the end of the month. If people do not get, and that's about, I'm sorry, about the rec center and the pool. If you don't get something, be sure again, the dates are not set, but there will be public hearings in order to air concerns or make suggestions. And please be watching for this week newspapers for that.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank the both schools, administrators, and teachers for coming out on their day off, in essence, to come in and present to us. We appreciate it and all the hard work that you do. I'd like to thank everyone else who came out here tonight. So one of the few opportunities we have to get out into the schools. So far, it seems to be working well. And again, looking forward to continuing on and finishing off a great year. Thank you. And now, items 6.01, items from the, oh, I take that back. 5.02, there will be a date change for the April Board of Education meeting. It will be moved from April 19th to the April 12th, so it'll be 1 week earlier. This is due to the superintendent. I don't know if you'd like to speak on where you're going to have the opportunity to go for that.
Yes, President Begney, as part of our membership to the League of Innovative Schools, I am headed to San Diego to see some innovative schools very much like ours. I went to a fall workshop as part of our membership in the fall in Pittsburgh, and then in the spring, apparently, we go to the other side of the country, so off to San Diego.
Sounds really nice right about that. So we'll go ahead and do I have a motion for moving the date of the board meetings from April 19th to April 12th?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Moved by Mr. Truex, seconded by Mr. Whitman. Any other discussion? Madam Treasurer, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Bellau?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begley?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 6.01 now, we have the superintendent. We speak on different items at this time. And Madam Superintendent.
Thank you, President Begley. Just two things today, and both were around food services. I want to send a huge shout out to Wendy Nabandi, who I understand is under the weather and just getting out of the hospital, unfortunately. But our food services program has really been working diligently to increase our options for kids, to expand the quality of our options for kids, and they are being recognized as they should. Our kids are giving a thumbs up. And also, Food Services was nominated and ranked number 11 in the country for by the Food Services Director magazine, so that's some special recognition. Also this month, we got word from ODE that out of 149 applicants, we again, for the second consecutive year, have been awarded a grant to purchase an oven for Slate Ridge right here at this school, which really saves taxpayer dollars. We get this grant from the state to purchase that oven as opposed to us using dollars from the general fund. Last year, I believe we were awarded funds to purchase an oven at Hannah Ashton. So congratulations to Wendy and her team. We certainly appreciate their efforts.
Thank you. Congratulations. There'll be some good food cooked, I bet. Now we have recognition of visitors. Item 7.01. We have one who is pre-ranked, Jim Rodemeyer. If you'd like to approach the stand, please.
I thought I was
going to
be.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and you want to speak when we're open enrollment. We do have one slip. Madam Treasurer, are there any other slips that were turned in to you?
No, that's the one.
Darian Herron, if you would please come down. You'll be talking to the board about dress code.
Thank you, Darian, and to the models. I know that you and some other of your classmates came and presented on this back in the fall, and I was interested to learn from board member Brzezinski at the time that the dress code, there had been a similar team a few years back that did something like this, and I'm sure that they, you know, tried to create the most sensible thing at the time, and then yet we still end up with policies like, you know, black and green jeans are okay, but blue or not, which I don't know, it doesn't make much sense to me either, although I'm sure there must have been some reason for it at the time. But is this, I mean, what, if we were to do such a thing like this, is this something that would fall under, like, a policy committee, or what?
That's where the policy is actually made. It would be in a policy committee, but, you know, as far as the process, you know, I advise, obviously, doing the right steps, coming to the Board of Education. You want to get a team together to follow the procedures and make sure that everything works the way it does. I would turn that over to the superintendent as far as how to best go about that to make sure that, you know, all the different views are represented. I would say ultimately the decision rests with the Board of Education, and I understand where you're coming from. It's a very difficult thing to try and monitor student dress, especially in this day and age, because there's other considerations that come up with us that maybe you don't see right away, and vice versa. Sometimes blue jeans are just blue jeans, and it's nothing more than that. So there's always room for improvement, and just the idea of the dialogue and coming up and speaking in front of us for the second time is a productive issue.
I don't have anything further to say. I think we talked about this in the fall, and again, I'll reiterate, I was the person who led the committee in talking with students. I believe that was 7 years ago. I led that conversation with a group of students from both Summit and Livingston campus, and the students were the ones who suggested the different color pants, because at the time, you could only wear black, khaki, and one other thing. So the students were the ones who put on the table, and I brought back to the superintendent, who brought to the board, the students want to wear other color pants, any color solid pants. That was a student recommendation and an ask from the kids at the time, and that's why we at the Board of Education at the time added that, minus blue jeans. They were very adamant about no denim, no blue denim is what we landed on. But the tweaks that we see from the dress code right now that are reflected in our current handbook and our dress code came directly from kids. A student group that I facilitated in the summer probably met 3 or 4 times with these students trying to hash out and make tweaks to what they thought was a very rigid dress code at the time. And it was probably the second or third tweak that the board had made to dress code. So I have a little bit of history on that. If there is a desire from the board to reconvene the group, I'm superintendent now, so I won't be facilitating that conversation, but we can certainly get some money to do that. But it's important that you know that what we have reflects what students asked for. So there was, the board did listen at the time to what kids were saying. They did hear that, and they did make some tweaks and changes to reflect what the kids wanted at the time.
Yeah, thank you for coming out. That's something definitely that we can discuss further if that's in need, if there is a need. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, item 8.01, 2, 3, 4, and 5 from the finance. Do I have a motion?
So
moved. Moved by Mrs. Dunlap. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Any discussion or Madam Treasurer, are there any items you would like to go into a little bit more detail about?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. On the board agenda for tonight are the approval of the January 31st financial statement. We also have our normal monthly appropriation modifications. We do have 3 donations on tonight. A donation of lumber from Home Depot to the Baldwin Road Literacy Lounge. Mrs. Dunlap's campaign fund contribution to the art scholarship. And then the Remsburg United Methodist Church donated $610 to Ian Ashton Middle School to create a display area throughout the school to honor display student work. In addition to that, on for approval are 2 scholarships. The first team, 408 Fiber Robotics Scholarship and the Grant Keista Swartz Scholarship.
Thank you. Any other further discussion or questions from the board? Madam Treasurer, can you take a roll, please?
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Bagan?
Aye. Motion's passed. Item 9.01, 02, 03, and 04 are all up for action. This is our personnel. Do I have a motion? Second?
Second.
Moved by Mr. Whitman, second by Ms. Tornero. Any discussion?
Superintendent Thomas Manning, could I just have a little bit of clarification and a little bit more information as I was looking at, I guess it was payment for other services. Okay, so I see a lot of WEP gifted services flat rates for those, and if you could just explain a little bit what those are for. And I see mostly, I see Baldwin and all four of the academies represented, but I know this is the first year we're doing this at the high school level, but I didn't see anything for Hannah Ashton or Wagner Junior High.
President Begbie, Mrs. Dunlap, as part of our efforts to expand our gifted services and to students at the middle level outside of a full-out program, middle and high school acknowledge that our kids do not become ungifted once they become high schoolers. We are expanding our efforts by recruiting the assistance of our staff to write WEPs, written education plans, and written acceleration plans for students that qualify for gifted services, to identify courses in which they qualify, to write plans that meet their specific needs so that they are served and receive basically credit from the state that they are served and have plans on file. I don't know, I can't recall whether Wagner Road and Hannah Ashton was approved in the fall. I'll have to go back to board docs, but all the middle level buildings and all four academies would be participating in this because there are gifted kids in all of those. We have the gifted program on the Wagner campus, but there would still be kids at the junior high and the middle level buildings at Wagner that would qualify for these services that are not part of the Gateway program.
Okay, so they may have, we'll check on that, and they may have just been.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll have to go back in board docs and research whether we did those two schools at an earlier date or whether those are to come at a later date.
Okay, and then just one other question, because I know for gifted services, the law states that we identify students, but we don't necessarily, it doesn't explain, we don't necessarily have to provide services, although we do. So we have specific gifted programs, but when it comes to the web or the written education plan, what are we providing for those students? We have a plan, but what is that plan? What services are we providing?
Well, again, Mrs. Dunlap, that's unique to the student. So there's no like overarching plan. The goal is to provide some level of services to students who qualify in each of the buildings, even if they're not part of the pull-out program like Gateway. And some of those plans, for example, would call for some kind of enriched opportunity in mathematics, some kind of accelerated opportunity in mathematics, some kind of extended services of some sort. It depends based on the student's needs. At the high school level, it's more course-specific as opposed to any additional services. It's course-specific and identifying the courses that students are taking that qualify as gifted courses.
Okay, and then just one other question with that. So I know that, do we identify, and just having seen some of these, you know, identifications myself, what areas do we identify? I know cognitive ability, academic talent. Do we do creative thinking and visual performing arts or no?
I think we identify in all areas. We use some of those to place in others that we don't. We use mainly mathematics, superior cog in reading to make placements and to determine services, not so much the other areas of giftedness, but I believe identify in all areas.
Okay. So the creative thinking and visual performing arts are not required by law? Just the other two, the cognitive ability and academic?
Well, none of them are required. We're not required to serve any of them.
Not serving, but identifying.
Yes. We identify all, but we don't serve all.
Right, so I didn't know if we identified all in four areas: cognitive, academic, creative, thinking, and visual performing arts.
And I think, yes, we do.
Okay.
But we don't serve kids in all of those areas.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or discussion?
Yes, sir. Also looking at the WEP, I see there's the range goes from $300 flat rate to $2,100 flat rate. Does that just depend on how many gifted students are in each school, or what determines that?
That rate is determined by yes and no. So some number of students. It depends on number of the caseload and depends on the grade band. Where you'll see the differentiation in salary. It also depends on the level of commitment to the teacher, the teacher's willing to make to getting the certification in gifted. We have extended or offered a larger rate of service for those who are interested in making a long-term commitment to becoming gifted certified, which takes a lot of extra time and education. So for those teachers who have expressed an interest in doing that and staying along for a three-year period of time, you'll see a higher rate of pay as opposed to others. Again, it also depends on the number of kids at each grade level, so there's a whole lot of variables to go into that flat rate.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Beckett?
Aye. Motion's passed. Item 10.01, 2, 3, and 4, curriculum and programs. Talking first off with sports travel for boys baseball, educational travel with Summit Road and the Ohio Leadership Institute and summer school. Is there anyone here that can speak about any of these particular items? It's a race to the podium.
The summit trip is we take our fourth graders for one night, May 16th and 17th. So we'll spend the night on the 16th with each school. And we spend the day basically in five classes over the two-day or a day and a half time frame that are an hour and a half, all related to our curriculum and our 21st century skills. And then the evening, we split into five half-hour sessions that have things like campfire, camouflaging activities, things like that, that, again, go with our curriculum, but kind of in a smaller group. So we take all of the kids. It costs them $45. We don't leave anybody behind due to cost. So if we have kids that can't afford either our PTO or our principal's fund helps figure that out for kids. We also take parent chaperones with us, all of which are hand fingerprinted at the central office. Most of them are parents that are in our building quite often. And then all of our fourth grade teachers and myself and a couple of other parapros go with us as well.
Now, how many years have you been doing this program?
The whole time. So this will be our fifth year. Yeah. In fact, we just talked about whether or not it was an opportunity that we should get all elementary principals to discuss if it's good for our kids. Is it good for all kids? And I would say yes, it is good for all kids. Ideally, we usually don't go on a Monday, Tuesday, but with the change in calendar, the dates that we normally hold were the last 2 days of school. And so obviously we had to go with whatever we had open, so we've already looked ahead next for the following year so that we can get back to a Thursday, Friday schedule.
All the I's are dotted and T's are crossed as far as insurance and all that fun stuff.
Absolutely.
Of course. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, clarification. So when you say 21st century skills, this means like various skills appropriate for the 21st century, not 20 skills appropriate for the first century.
Got it.
We'll figure it.
You're welcome to join us if you like. It's a good time.
It's always good to make that clarification.
Right.
My name is Bob Benjamin. I was just hired as a head baseball coach about 3 months ago. And the first thing on the schedule when I got it was a Florida trip. So I met with the nine seniors and the nine, the parents of the nine seniors, and they were all in and wanted to go. It is over spring break. It's March 26th through April 2nd. The athletic department is picking up the tournament fee, and all the young men are being transported by their parents. We are all staying in the same hotel, but the young men are staying with their parents also. So we have a five-game tournament in Florida.
And what is your participation rate? Is it 100%? Is everyone going? Or?
Yes, we had a meeting, and the 15 young men, yes, all are. Yes.
Dedicated parents.
Yes. We're trying to start something good here.
Yeah.
Finally.
And I assume that all the insurance and all the other questions have been solved and answered.
Yes.
Any other questions, comments? Sounds like a fun trip. Where in Florida are you going?
Yes, sir.
Anything else? Thank you. Wagner World Junior High, the Ohio Leadership Institute.
Good evening. The Gateway Program has attended this event the last few years. This is a weekend trip where the 7th and 8th graders go downtown to a hotel. It's the Model UN. And so each of the teams has a country that they represent, and they go downtown. A scenario is presented to the teams, and then they act like role bodies and decide on how the role bodies will solve that solution and that problem. So it's a 3-day event. It does take on a school day there, 2 school days, and then the weekend as well. Gateway teachers chaperone that event with them.
We'd love to see what presentation they come back.
They would love that. They would love that. They had great success, and so I'm confident that they'll bring home some more hardware again this year as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any as for discussion of summer school, Madam Superintendent, do you have any commentary on that subject?
President Begbie, members of the board, as we do each year, we will be serving our students at all three grade levels, three bands, elementary, middle, and high. We're doing things just slightly different. Elementary students will all be served here at Slate Ridge. They'll be shuttled from their neighborhood elementary buildings to Slate Ridge. There's no cost for those students. The students who will be participating are students who are not on track for reading at grade level. So we'll be able to drill down to that number closer to the end of the year. Middle level, we are going to go back to having a middle level program at each of the middle level buildings, Wagner Road Campus, Hannah Ashton, and Baldwin, to hopefully increase participation. We found that when we tried to satellite that program in one building, the participation went down. So we are going back to the individual schools to support those students. There is no cost for students at that program, and they too can be shuttled from the neighborhood elementary. And high school will be doing remediation courses and physical education and health and OGT tutoring. All summer school programs start basically right after school's out, the first week of June, and elementary is the last program that ends, and it ends July 1. We have teachers lined up to meet the needs of these students. We gave you approximate cost, but this is a critical need. We'll use title funds as we have them available, but we think it's important to serve the kids who are in need to have them prepped and ready for the fall.
Thank you very much. The two items that are on for action this evening are the sports travel and education travel. The other two items were for discussion. We did have a motion and a second. Should we separate the two of them out, or is it all right just to vote on them all the same?
Then we'll go.
Do I have a motion? So moved. Moved by Mr. Truex, second by Ms. Dunlap. Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begbie?
Aye. Motion's passed. Policies 11.4.
I'm sorry. So now that the motion passes, do we discuss summer school some more?
If you would like, but we did discuss it just moments ago.
Okay. So you mentioned that at the high school level, the summer school courses would include
include physical education and health?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I was under the impression that mostly these were online courses, but these will be like in-person courses then?
This year we're doing a hybrid.
We're going to be doing a hybrid delivery model in which the students most of them will be engaging in online blended instruction with the support of a teacher in the classroom. So they'll report on a daily basis and have a teacher who is in the classroom who could do small groups, individual, but we'll be doing what we call a hybrid. So the teacher won't be planning the course himself or herself. We have the content, and the student will be working at their own pace on the content with the support of the teacher.
So how would this, for physical education, would this be basically the same as it has been for online physical education before?
In physical education for
several years has been a flex credit course in which we allow our students in the 21st century who are engaged in lots of things outside of school, activities, to log what they're doing, to create a plan, log what they're doing, and check in with their teacher. That is the course. We've been running that course for, I believe, definitely more than 5-7 years, possibly.
Okay. Well, I have, concerns about the feasibility and effectiveness of online physical education, but that's a bigger question than just for summer school, so I'll save that for another time.
I'd like to correct and make sure that you understand that the actual course is not online. Kids are engaged in physical activity outside of the school day, things that they do naturally, organically in their day, as opposed to piling on a course when many of our kids are engaged in lots of things that would meet the criteria for athletics and physical activity. So we're substituting those things and logging those things and giving them credit for that in lieu of adding on to their day.
Okay. So yeah, I'm in favor of giving credit for the swim team and various sports activities and things that they participate in. But I've also heard parents say that for some kids it's like strike a pose and sit in the picture of yourself running. I don't know. This is hearsay, but but it's something that I'm interested in keeping an eye on and perhaps discussing it just, as a discussion of electives and things, not so much as just, the summer school issue here. So I don't want to derail this discussion, but since physical education was brought up, I'm mentioning these things.
I think it's a larger question that a lot of parents have had, and that's something that, that's outside of this particular context with as regards to summer school. We do have to find ways to be innovative, but that might be something we can take a look at just so we all have a better understanding as we move forward. So that is moved on. 11.01, 11.02, we're going to go ahead and pull those two specifically, vote on those, and then Mr. Rodemeyer is going to come up and speak before we get into the open enrollment policy. Do I have a motion from 11.01 and 11.02, issues from calendar change? Then we'll move straight on to, Madam Superintendent, do you want to talk a little bit more about any of the dates that have changed?
Just standard procedure at this time of year, approving the start of school. All of the buildings are doing a staggered start in an effort to transition students at different levels in a very seamless way. The high school is going back to their ninth grade day. They thought it was very effective last year. We reinstated that for the first time in several years. So just the typical staggered starts you'll see is 11.02. 11.01 is just the parent-teacher conference nights, and we have made an effort to stagger those as well so the parents who have students at different grade levels and buildings can attend those sessions as needed and not have to choose.
So just to clarify, the calendar committee already established the dates. We are just
outlining the staggered start dates and the conference dates.
Yes, the calendar committee last year established the 2016-17 school calendar. These are just drilling down on and start dates, and so we have a calendar that was approved last year for 16-17. These are dates for conferences and when kids start school, which kids come on which days.
And with that, now I will ask Jim Rodenmeyer to approach this podium.
Members of the Board of Education, members of the administration, I've been doing probably about 3 weeks of research on the open enrollment policy, because as I recall, there was a portion of it that was inserted and then later on taken out. And what I have for you are three dates to show you where this occurred. And I would like for you to consider possibly reinserting this. Under the cover sheet on most of these policies of JECBB, the cover sheet is state law. And that has not changed. And that is what is consistently approved each year. What has changed from time to time are the guidelines, which you will find under JECBB-R. And that's what I would like to discuss a little bit with you this evening. That portion, the guidelines, have been brought to the board and approved 7 times in the last 5 years. The original cover sheet was adopted January 21st, 2003. So the interdistrict transfer policy itself, state law, has been in effect for 13 years. As I recall, and you may correct me if I'm wrong, as I recall, this Board of Education began to consider open enrollment around the year 2010, might have been 2011. On May the 15th, 2012, the board initiated its first policy, or guidelines, policy and guidelines, to go in line with this. On the cover sheet, state law states that district capacity limits by grade level, school building, or educational program shall be implemented by authority of this policy, and to provide that. What I have for you here, and I'm going to pass out, as you may notice, under this is the June 19th submission. And you will notice on the first page of the guidelines, under Section E, very delineated class sizes and building capacities. Now, let me qualify this in saying This was for open enrollment. And under this policy, and under what is stated here, it gave some guidelines to the district as to what the capacities should be. In other words, the number of kids that we should bring in to each of the buildings. Now, whether you realize it or not, sooner or later, you're going to have to deal with a saturation level. You're either going to get, in some form, down the road, too many open enrollment kids, or too many kids in residence, or both. And I think it's very important that some establishment of hard figures of capacity and class size should be arrived at so that when that day comes, there's no question as to how you should operate. That particular policy was adopted after a second reading on July 17, 2012, which I have here.
If you two would share, I appreciate it. I don't have an own.
You will notice under the guidelines, on page 2 with no change, or page 1 under the guidelines and page 2 under the guidelines are the same basic capacities and class size limits that were found on the June board meeting agenda. So that was done in two meetings, as it's supposed to be. And in the context of all this, and I don't mean to bring up bad things, but the fact of the matter is, in May, negotiations began with the REA. In November, an agreement was reached and signed by the REA and the board, negotiated agreement. And subsequently, in December 18, 2012, and you can read into whatever you want to with this, this is simply fact that I'm stating. Second option would be to table this and send it back to the policy committee so that they can consider inserting these limits and capacities. And your third option is just to simply let it go as it is and face this down the road. Do you have any questions?
No immediate questions, Jim, but I appreciate the all the research you've done here and the very specific items to consider. So I will consider it.
I'd like to thank Mrs. Miller for helping you with the research, because it's not easy to go through the board docs and do all that reading and decipher all of this and then keep all this separate so that it makes sense.
I did have one question just to verify that I'm looking at all the same things. The June 19th and July 17th, you're talking about item C, which is district capacity ordinance by grade level school building or education program?
Yes.
And that's on those two, but not on the December 18th one, that particular
thing. It was not there under the board agenda because that doesn't change. That's state law.
So, Jim, where is the change? I apologize for my personal confusion. So, where is the change? Because I know we're looking at here, JECBD, and comparing that with June 19th and July 17th. But December 18th, that covers, God, we're looking at JECBDR, which are the guidelines.
Yes, and that was not included in that agenda item on the board docs.
So, where is the
change? The cover sheet is state law, and it doesn't change.
This is gone. Right.
Cover page is gone.
The cover page was not there.
And item 3 or item D is missing.
President Begley, if you can allow me to give this some context.
Please.
Thank you for your remarks, Mr. Rodemeyer. I happen to have been a part of all of these tweaks in the policy, and we can give this some context if you would like me to. The first year that we approved open enrollment, you're correct, it was 2010. We started staff students only. So 2010-11 was only for staff students. The next year, we rolled it out to the community to expand open enrollment to students, to folks outside of our staff members. And we added these capacity limits as a safety net or reassurance to the community that we were not going to get in a situation where we could not meet the needs of our resident students and that open enrollment students would be taking the seat, for example, for lack of a better word, of a student that's open enrolled in our district. So it was intended to be a safety net to ensure that we would take care of resident kids first. Unfortunately, we discovered in the implementation of the first year that those caps had unintended consequences, and in trying to accommodate both our open enrollees and our resident kids, we found ourselves with, and I'll give you a rough example, and if I know we had problems, it started, I believe, at Rose Hill and French Run, where we had a situation where we ended up with 30 kids, for example, and we had to split 30 kids into two sections. Okay? We ended up with a few more kids, or actually it was like 26 kids or 25 kids or 24 kids in a section when the policy says that we would have a section of 23. So in the summer in July, for example, if we got 24 kids in a section, we'd have to hire another teacher and split those 24 kids into two sections because the policy limited us to 23 kids or we could not accommodate that open. So we either had to turn the student away or hire another teacher. And we, at the time, weren't in the business of turning kids away because we had set a deadline. We said we notified parents. We notified parents. We found as school got closer to opening, we're not in compliance with the policy. We have 24 kids in a classroom with open enrollment kids, which is a violation of the policy, but not a violation of the contract. Do you understand what I'm saying? So we ended up, in trying to adhere to the policy, hiring a second teacher for 24 kids. So we removed the caps so that we didn't have the financial unintended consequences that we did not foresee by keeping the caps in place. But every summer, when we do open enrollment and when we accommodate kids, we monitor very closely our contractual commitments as far as caps, and we monitor how many kids are requesting each school. I've brought with me tonight to help with clarification and can project. Tricia, if you project our enrollment data that might help further explain this. I want to focus on the other
spreadsheet, Tricia. It's, I think it's titled, it's February 5th enrollment data. Todd, would you have it?
This one right here?
Yeah.
All right. Now, I want to go to tab at the bottom. That'll tell you at the very bottom. If you scroll over, you can see our current numbers. I just want overall numbers in the district. At the very bottom. The tabs at the bottom. Okay, if you scroll over, that'll give you February 5th. Other way. I tried to give you the most recent. It might be January 11th, but that's close enough. But January 11th, you can pull that up. All right. So if you look at our enrollment count and you look at the numbers you have in front of you, let's just focus on elementary. If you can increase that a little bit for my very tired and old eyes. So let's just take French Run, all right, French Run has 69 kindergarten students, four sections, so we are within the spirit of our contract there, and French Run has six open enrollment students. So I put this up to have the board. You have the numbers of open enrollment students in front of you. You have our enrollment data in front of you. You can see, minus the caps that we had back in 2012, we are still within the spirit of our contract. We're honoring our contract in every single case. The two shaded areas, right, 127 in French Run in third grade and 133 at Slate Ridge, in second grade are the only two exceptions in elementary school that we are over our contractual agreement. Only two. So we are accommodating, we are able to accommodate both our resident students and our open enrollment students without the caps that we had several years ago. And there are two examples that we are over. And we're over at that grade level, yes, but we're not over in the building. And the principals are aware of it, the teachers in those cases are aware of it, but we do our very best. We have done our very best in this district to honor the spirit of the contract with the caps, wherever those are present. And you will see on this enrollment sheet, every single month, we monitor and track it. We track it particularly in the summer when it's most when it fluctuates the most and when we have to get on board with hiring staff. So we are very diligent about honoring the spirit of open enrollment, accommodating our resident kids, and providing classrooms that are manageable for our teachers and our staff and comfortable and fair to our community. So I would argue that, again, open enrollment's been a long journey. We've learned some things along the way, and we've had to make some tweaks in the policy to reflect our learnings. But at no time have we taken advantage of this policy by loading up classrooms and cutting off teachers at the knees and not having the resources necessary to accommodate kids. There's not one example in the history of these enrollment sheets, and I've had every year from 2008 on, every year that I can share with you for every month. And I monitor it extremely closely, and so does Dr. Allen, who works with me in the summer and monitoring that, and the leads. We keep a very tight watch, close watch, on open enrollment as a commitment to this community, as we said we would.
A quick comment. I think this is one of those situations where the monitoring is, you know, it's a vigilant thing. It's something that has to be continued to be looked at all the way.
I agree, and respect to Mrs. Thomas Mann, I am not questioning what's going on right now. What I stated before, and I'll state again, you're going to be facing a saturation limit in the future. And as successful as this open enrollment program has been, and I want to say I'm not for open enrollment, nor am I against open enrollment. I'm ambivalent about it. But I'm just saying to you that I think some capacity guidelines need to be put in there for future challenges when it comes to open enrollment. It could be somewhere 10 years down the road where you won't have any room for open enrollment kids. And it'll have to be changed again. And if you address this now, you won't have the problem in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
As far as the contract is concerned, there are no class size limits in the contract. It's aspirational goals. And so, no, you're not violating the contract because there are no class size limits in the contract. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Superintendent, thank you for the clarification here. And in fact, this very table was the one that I was referring to last month after Dr. Adams' presentation on open enrollment. One of the things that reassured me that we were doing our best to keep tabs on this and not let it get out of hand. As for the unintended consequences of the policy, it sounds like, it seems like it's presented very black and white. Either the policy has to go or we're going to be forced to spend money for teachers for just one extra student. And it just seems to me that there should be some kind of compromise that can be arrived at, and it seems to me that what you described up here is exactly such a thing. So perhaps if we could put some of the things that you've been doing here to get around this problem, put them into policy, maybe that would be something to consider. So for the policy committee, I would suggest that maybe you consider that.
Policy committee meeting will be scheduled shortly. It should be within the next few weeks. I know there's a number of items on there, but just for everyone out there, this is obviously an issue that we're very familiar with when it comes to enrollment, just not just open enrollment, but just overall across the academy structure, all the way down through the elementary level. So we will be vigilant about that to make sure that we're doing what's best for all of our students in the process, as well as maintaining a good relationship with the taxpayers on this issue.
And again, I've looked at this, and this has been on my radar for quite some time when it comes to class size. And I have to say, I have seen it done in one other district where there were class sizes that were put into policy, and they were done with ranges. So that you did get, if you got to that point where I have a class of 24 when my cap is 23, then there is a range in there in which someone can take some greater look at that classroom and see what is the makeup of that classroom. Do we need to split it up depending on what type of students are in there? Or you can have the other option then of adding an aide to help out with that. I talked a long time ago and advocated for class size and policy with ranges. And But Mr. Romer, I don't think this could be solved tonight. This is a deep issue, and I agree that the district is keeping a close eye on it. I know I walked into one of these rooms behind me, and I'm proud that we only have two, but I know I walked into one recently and it was packed, especially when you have that age level that is so young and needs so much attention. I think we said this once earlier tonight, maybe not for a resolution or an answer tonight, or maybe this is I see this as a discussion. I've wanted to discuss this for many years, and that is class sizes with ranges and possibly in board policy. So,
any other comments? Madam Treasurer, did we have a motion on the floor? It's been a while.
No, we did not.
Okay, let's go with that. May I have a motion? Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Is there any other discussion just before? All right, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Bellucci?
Aye. Motion is passed. Items 12.01, 12.02, and 12.03 are on for action this evening. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truex. Second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Tenaro. Do we have anyone who would like to come and kind of discuss the sale of the parcels at Redwood Street first before we move to the next item?
Basically, the parcels of 1920 and Redwood Street from 1936. Excuse me. These properties have been vacant for about 6 years. We did go through a public auction process. We only had one respondent. That individual submitted a bid, did not close on the bid. As a result, they forfeited their deposit. We were approached by the same individual with a counter offer of $50,000. These properties need a lot of work. They're in pretty bad shape. They were originally built back in 1964. They did have an inspector come through. There was about $95,000 worth of infrastructure, anything from furnaces to roofs, et cetera. And so the recommendation was to go ahead and accept Jones' offer and to dispose of the properties. Can we go to the football field?
Just finish commentary for this particular one. I know that buildings and ground on the subject. I'll leave that to those that want to discuss it, but I know we talked extensively when we were coming up with the agenda about this issue. We exhausted a lot of different options. We threw a lot of different opportunities out there, things to hold on to the property, things to refit, all of these other things. But it seems that the best overall at this point, with the amount of work that would be done, that needed to be done for these buildings to be of any use to us in the future, we would be spending more money than we can imagine on this one particular item. I'll turn it over from Buildings and Grounds or anyone else who has comments on this particular item.
So what Mr. Starr said, we brought up in the meeting there, and I would also like to add that Superintendent Thomas Manning also brought up the good point that these could be a liability for the district. They're kind of, you know, dangerous buildings, and if someone has an accident there or something, then we'd be on the hook for that. So it seems to me that it's in our interest to get rid of them, and it'd be nice if we could get more money for them. But right now, I'm glad that we can at least get something and basically get them off our hands.
Any other discussion specific to this item before we start talking about the football field turf replacement? Just go ahead if you want to talk a little bit about this. I don't know if anyone else is here from the athletic department that wants to say a few words as well. That was quick.
Basically, back in October, we took the building to go to talk about the football field. The current building we have was originally installed in 2008. Basically, this is the end of the 8-year warranty on the summer of 16. We looked through a lot of different rules, myself and Mr. Perkins. We basically came to basic recommendations to accept the proposal by the Moats Group. They've done a lot of fields around Central Ohio. Basically, the proposal we looked at and we're putting forth the recommendation is a new field, 10-year warranty, the powder coat, the existing billboard posts, electrical conduit will be ran underneath the field for the potential installation of field plate clocks. Annual GMAX testing will occur. I know that's been a big discussion. 10 years manual maintenance are part of that. The construction window will be around a 22-day construction window. Started on June 1st, we've done by June 30th, ready for the fall football season.
After our torrential downpours at one point in time last year, if you all remember, I had the opportunity to go out to the field and see the condition of it. There's a lot of things with it. Obviously, the warranty is expiring with this particular company that we have now, but then it's also a safety issue with our athletes. whether they're football band or whomever else is using those particular facilities. And the price is very competitive. And like I said, I like the fact that it has everything kind of built into it as far as the warranty, the upkeep, and then the GMAX, which basically means when your head hits the turf, how much does it, you know, how much of an impact is it? And that is obviously a huge safety issue. We've all known, you know, the situation with concussions, seeing, especially in the, you know, high school athletic sports like football. So, thank you.
Okay. Also, someone was asking me about you know, competitive bids on here, and a lot of this happened even before before I was on the board. But from the discussion with the Buildings and Grounds Committee with Mr. Starr and Mr. Perkins, it was clear that there had been a lot of other bids, and by the time we saw it, it was down to two, and the price on that I saw it had decreased since our sort of briefing meeting back in December on current business. So so from what I've seen of the process, it looks like it was bid out, and we did our best to, you know, get the price down as much as we could. So I'm satisfied with the process from what I've seen.
Mr. Jones?
I think it's important to note that the Mons Group is here in Ohio. They're down in Cincinnati. So we're dealing with somebody that's local rather than somebody that was out of state and out of business. And the Mons Group has also increased the they increased the durability of the field turf itself to the heavier duty material. So we're getting quite the bang for our buck there.
Can I address just one? I just want to address one safety concern that was brought up to me by just a few people, and that is the infill that is sometimes rubber, and it's this chipped rubber made from old tires. And there was a story that came out, I think, in the a year ago or so, and there was some concern amongst soccer players, in particular goalies, and who spent a lot of time down on the ground and with this rubber, and there was the question of whether or not they were contracting cancer as part of a toxology that was within these tires. And but I understand that this infill is sand and rubber, so it's not pure rubber. So that was very good news to me. And also in my research and my reading, the EPA has not come out and said that there is any conclusive evidence or any scientific evidence that links cancer in young children with this infill. And you know, there might be something coming out later on this year. EPA is not the only one who is doing some research into this, but there are some other groups as well. And so I was happy to hear that this is not just the rubber, but it is a combination, so that takes that down quite a bit.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Did you want to speak briefly on the surplus items?
Basically, there's used textbooks.
Sounds exciting. Used textbooks, if anybody did not hear. Any other discussion? Madam Treasurer, could you please call the roll?
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
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 Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begley?
Aye. Item 13.01. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
First by Mr. Whitman, seconded by Mr. Truax. This meeting, or Madam Treasurer, could you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.